failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the century of lies.
Welcome to this edition of Century of Lies. My name is Dean Becker, and I promised you last week that I was going to get even busier bringing you more drug war information. So let's just jump right into an interview I did with Mr. Gatewood Galbraith.
All right, we're proud to welcome here to the Drug Truth Network for the first time an author of the book, The Last Free Man in America Meets the Synthetic Subversion, Mr. Gatewood Galbraith. Hello, sir.
Well, hello, Dean. Hello, everybody. I'm real honored to be on your show, Dean. I've heard a bit about it, and I'm proud that you asked me to be on today.
Well, sir, I find great simpatico in your writings and in our brief discussion up there in New York. We see things a lot alike. There's a great subversion, if you will, of our rights going on at this time. Tell us, if you will, about your thoughts. Where are we headed?
Well, I am here in Lexington, Kentucky, and my family owned a small farm, and we lived in a small town, and until we were forced out of the small town agrarian economy and into the larger city by the death of the agrarian form of society, the agricultural-based small town economy. And I often wondered why that occurred, and in my investigation of it, I found that it was a planned migration, a planned forced migration that occurred when the right to produce fiber, fuel, medicine, and food from the natural cycle became outlawed in behalf of the synthetic producers of fiber, fuel, medicine, and food. I found that hand in hand the illegalization of cannabis as a crop, as a both an industrial, textile, and medicinal crop, was the linchpin event that has allowed the synthetic manufacturers, those people whom I call the petrochemical, pharmaceutical, military, industrial, transnational, corporate, fascist, elite folks, who have viewed the production of the commodities of life from the natural cycle, fiber, fuel, medicine, and food, they view the farmer producing those items from the natural cycle as competitors, and that they have engineered a change in the law and the mindset of America to where the natural cycle and the people who produce from the natural cycle are suspect anymore, and many of them have been criminalized, especially in the production of cannabis, so that these synthetic manufacturers have achieved a monopoly position by way of criminalizing the competition. And I learned all of that at the same time that I learned that that marijuana is the number one medicine on earth since it cured my asthma. So taking that all together, I had to write a book about it. I've run for political office on several occasions. I've run for governor of the state of Kentucky 3 times, Congress twice, attorney general once. And as a matter of fact, I am the most successful independent political candidate in America the last 60 years or so. While I have not won a major office, I've gotten from 15 to 27% as both a third party and as an independent. So, you know, my message that I've been putting out to the people politically is that the whole concept of America and individual freedom and the system of government being set up to benefit the people is under attack right now from folks who view the Constitution and the Bill of Rights as impediments to the implementation of a new world order and a global economy. And our children have been thrown over the competition with people halfway around the world who work all day for a bowl of rice and a mat to sleep on. So, you know, I'm out here to warn this generation of young folks that they better gird their loins and look at life as a warrior looks at life, because the government is not out to protect them and their interests, and it's pretty much every person for themselves.
We have been duped. We were fed the lie that the cannabis products that were on the shelf back in the early part of the 20th century, and that the hemp that was used for, as you say, food, fuel, fiber, etc., was a danger to our nation. What would you advise people? How can they educate themselves in this regard?
Well, the general theme of the book is something I was taught that I learned, but the best phrase for it is that every generation must rewin its own freedoms. You know, the sacrifices and the insights and the brilliance of any of the past generations, from our founding fathers up to the World War II generation, and up to the Korean War generation, and up to the Vietnam War generation. All that was wonderful, and it kept us alive as far as freedom goes for a while, but nothing is going to ensure our freedoms today unless each and every individual stands up and educates themselves about what the system is, educate themselves about why the American system and the constitutional form of government offers them the best chance ever of being able to explore themselves in their 360-degree capacity as a human being. And, you know, when they learn that themselves as an individual, then they go out and have to try to teach it to other people. I was 24 years older than a milkman when I decided that I was a pawn in the hands of this system. I didn't know my butt from a hole in the ground, and that I had better learn it or else I was going to end up in prison or dead at an early age. So I decided I was going to go to college and become an attorney and run for governor of the state of Kentucky, and that's what I've devoted my life to. So what I'm saying is that you cannot be voluntarily ignorant about the system and who you are within it and what your rights and duties are under that system. You've got to protect yourself. You've got to be a warrior in life. And, you know, the name of my book, The Last Free Man in America, people say, well, how can you call yourself the last free man? And I said, look, it's a challenge, not a title. If you feel like you're free, then stand up and express yourself, and it benefits us all. So I encourage everybody to get educated and stand up and be a part of the system. And, my book has gotten great reception, especially amongst the juniors and seniors in high school who said that they've never seen an explanation of government like I have it in that book, and they're all very delighted to kind of get a second perspective on it.
Gatewood, you're talking about the children's need to educate themselves. Each generation has to do it themselves. And I think there are great forces at work trying to prevent that insight, trying to prevent that education, and trying to prevent that change, the multinationals, the corporate interests. Let's talk about how pervasive their influence is.
Well, there is no doubt about it, Dean. They're trying to dumb down this generation, and they've taken out of all the kinds of civic classes that I was taught as a youngster. I was taught about the Constitution and about individual freedoms and the Declaration of Independence at an early age and what it meant. But the fact is that patriotism took a real hit at the Vietnam War, and young kids were not taught that freedom is something that you actually had to fight and die for, and there comes a time to do that. Guns became taboo. A political correctness has stifled, individual freedom and the natural pecking order that takes place out on the playground. The advent of big government into education and the mandates of that our school system has to follow nowadays, where they don't teach individualism, but, everybody has to blend in and, one person, one kid can't be put ahead of the rest of the class because it might make somebody else in the class feel bad. They are just simply dumbing us down without teaching civics and involvement anymore. This is the advent of the New World Order and the global economy. And the people who are trying to put that together cannot see furnishing the rest of the world the constitutional guarantees and due processes that we enjoy as citizens of the United States. So instead of trying to lift the rest of the world up and improve their status, they're trying to have us abdicate those things that make us special so that we can achieve parity with the rest of the world. And to hell with that. Listen, if they've adopted the Constitution and the Bill of Rights that gave everybody else and the rest of the world the same rights and privileges we enjoy, I would be a one-worlder. I would be a one-worlder. But I'll be damned if I'm going to stand by and watch them dissolve our constitutional liberties and our freedoms under the Bill of Rights in the name of some sort of parity or a new world order or global economy. I'm just not going to stand by and watch that happen. For those folks who are listening, the cover of my book is it's fairly controversial. It's got me holding an M60 with 400 rounds across my chest. You know, if we were a warrior class, I would be a member of the warrior class. I went to Marines in 66 and had an attack of asthma. I didn't know marijuana cured asthma at the time and got discharged. But, I'm Semper Fi all the way. I'm ready and willing to fight for what makes America free and fight for the ability of anybody to avail themselves of the constitutional freedoms. I don't care whether they're black, white, young, old, rich, poor, gay, straight. It doesn't make any difference to me. If you're a citizen of the United States, you're a very special and privileged person, and you ought to take it upon yourselves to find out why and exercise it on behalf of all the rest of the people, not only of this country, but of the world as a whole.
Well, once again, we're speaking with Mr. Gatewood Galbraith. He's the author of The Last Free Man in America Meets the Synthetic Subversion. Gatewood, I want to kind of underline a thought there about guns. A lot of folks think me, a liberal, a guy calling for the end of prohibition, that I would be against guns. I think I'll join the NRA folks in saying you'll get that gun when you pry it from my cold, dead fingers.
Well, you know, people don't understand the concept of conservatism anymore, Dean. That's one of the ways they've kind of trying to destroy what America's about. They have practiced newspeak on the word conservative. Listen, let me tell you, folks, that Mitch McConnell and Newt Gingrich were not conservatives. They were aliens. And you know, and Barry Goldwater would have taken them both by the ear and led them behind the woodpile and thrashed their butts for trying to pass off a bloated police state as a conservative law and order philosophy. A true conservative says the government is a very limited thing. It does not have the right to intercede in your bedroom, your bloodstream, your brain, your billfold, your back pocket, or your internet bulletin board. That it doesn't have the right to mandate your individual behavior. The Constitution limits the government. And, you know, it's the overbroad government that's the problem in many people's lives right now. So a true conservative would say, you know, could be, say, physically liberal, saying, let's spend some money on human needs, but at the same time be physically conservative, saying, hey, you know, let's not spend tax dollars on putting marijuana smokers in jail. You know, they're not injuring anybody else in the privacy of their own home, damn it. The government doesn't have the right to regulate that kind of behavior. So a true conservative is, in fact, one that gives people individual self-determination on a far grander scale than a lot of these liberals who think government ought to control everything.
Well, I think if Mr. Goldwater was still around, he could entice me to become a Goldwater Republican.
Well, Dean, you know, one of the things that I've done, one of the reasons I got 27% as an individual, as an independent for Congress, is phenomenal. I mean, most people don't get 1% or 2% when they run independent of any party, you know? I mean, that was a three-way race, too. So, you know, but what happened was that I matched up the gun owners with the marijuana smokers. And what it did is I went to these gun owners' meetings and I said, look, you know, the government is a conspiracy, and they mean to disarm you by teaching kids that guns are taboo, by discontinuing gun education classes, by trying to pass laws on the possession of handguns. And these same people who are trying to disarm you after your guns are the same people trying to put me in jail for my relationship with the green natural plant. And then I described hemp as an industrial textile crop and the fuel availability for farmers to grow and get a niche in the energy market. And you know, and these people, these light bulbs started going on over their heads. I mean, they were already clued in that the government was capable of conspiracy, but that fit right up their alley. And then I went to the marijuana smoker and said, look, you know, we ought to get these guys with the guns smoking as much good herb as we can. You know, I want them on my side to begin with, and it's all individual self-determination and practicing individual sovereignty in a country where that is at one time was encouraged and allowed. So I built up a kind of consortium of people that they're trying to keep us divided and therefore conquering us. You know, they've got us. I tell everybody, look, they've got us at each other's throats over one or two hot button issues, where we think we just can't get along because we differ on one or two hot-button issues and may differ widely on it, but they've got us ignoring the 10 or 12 or 14 other issues that we are absolutely locked in arm on, and they're stealing us blind in those areas because they got us pissing at each other over here on this one or two issues. And we need to get over those kinds of contests and get back in and protect the seed corn, protect the very basic rights that allow us the luxury to be debating these other rights to begin with.
Gilbert, do you have any current political aspirations?
Well, I'm right now, I believe I'm going to be a candidate in the Democratic primary for governor in May of 07 here in Kentucky. I've got a tremendous opportunity. The Republicans who took the office for the first time in 36 years have absolutely fumbled the ball, so they're not going to reelect a Republican in this state. And so the Democratic nominee is going to be the next governor. And I have a tremendous amount of support throughout the state, and I'm gearing up right now to make an announcement sometime in July, perhaps August. And I'm going to try to rediscover the American Revolution in the state of Kentucky.
Well, with that in mind, I do wish you the very best, and give the folks your website before we sign up.
Thank you very much, Dean. They can go to gatewood.com, G-A-T-E-W-O-O-D, gatewood.com. They can order the book off of there. They can go to barnesandnoble.com, amazon.com. I wrote it for folks who are looking for the path in this time, and I really hope that a lot of folks relate to it. I know that they've begun to, and I appreciate your exposure on your show, Dean, and thanks a lot.
Well, thank you, Gatewood.
Gatewood's got it right. Cannabis, the little plant that could, if only we would let it. Each summer we get the chance to vote down funding for the DEA in their efforts to bust medical marijuana patients, the Hinchey-Rohrabacher bill, and there are many organizations across the country working to educate and motivate you.
I'm Marty Chilcutt. I have incorporated as Medical Choice Michigan. I'm working with my associate and partner, Tim Beck, in Detroit, Michigan, and I'm located in Kalamazoo, Michigan. And our plans are to put a medical marijuana initiative on the ballot in Michigan for 2008.
And like most reformers, you and Tim dabble a little bit in some of these other provisions, some of the other offerings being put forward towards changing these drug laws. You guys are involved in recruiting and putting effort into the Hinchey bill, is that right?
Well, yeah, I have. Tim hasn't been on this, but I have been working on it with trying to get my local U.S. representative, Fred Upton, to change his vote on the Hinchey amendment. But I received a letter from him last week, and he said that he can't do that. He just can't bring himself to vote and to support the medical marijuana issue. I see him as a moderate Republican. I know him personally, and I've talked with him and met with him on veterans issues in the past. He's a Republican, and he's, you know, they're hanging tough on this issue.
Well, that's the point, isn't it, that they've hung tough with it so long it's hard to back down, I suppose. What are you doing in the local community? How can folks get involved?
They could write letters. They could contact phone calls and emails to Fred Upton here in southwestern Michigan and, you know, let him know how they feel. I know that's hard to get folks to do that, but it would help a lot. And I'm in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and anybody who supports the medical use of marijuana, that it would help here in Kalamazoo if they would locally contact the mayor's office or any of our city commissioners. I was the proponent and ran the campaign in Colorado that passed in the year 2000. So I have the experience of doing it in one state. And now, along with Tim Beck in Detroit, he's changed the laws in Detroit and Traverse City, Michigan, and Flint, Michigan, and he's working on several other, in Ann Arbor, Michigan, he's working on several cities at the city level before we do the state.
Okay, now we are speaking with Marty Chilcutt. You and Tim, I think, exemplify the fact that we can get it done, and that means concerned citizens acting together can accomplish a lot when they set their mind to it.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I mean, I saw this when I did the campaign in Colorado. I took it upon myself to do it, and I got the support, and I raised the money, and it happened. And the people, once you put it out there for the people, for the voters, the citizens, they will vote yes on this every time. I'm what you might call a senior citizen right now. I'm a member of AARP, and last year AARP did a polling nationally, and they had, I think it was 72% of their members said that patients using medical marijuana should not be arrested. Now, 72% is a lot of folks when you're talking about senior citizens that support this. Polling shows that this crosses party lines. It really does, even though that we have Republicans in charge of our House Congress right now, and they're hanging tough. But the Republican voters, 63% of them nationally support this and endorse medical use of marijuana. So it crosses party lines.
Marty, I want to thank you for your commitment. You're hanging tough with this situation and trying to change these marijuana laws.
Yeah, and I'd like to just add one thing. I'm a veteran, and I have a service-connected disability from my service, and I tested nuclear weapons and was exposed to high levels of radiation, ionizing radiation. I've had cancer several times. I'm in total remission. But my doctors at the VA in Colorado and in Michigan, they support me. They endorse this, and they support me in what I'm doing, my work at the VA, which is really nice to know that you know, they're there for us veterans on this issue.
This is Bindu Nair with Bayou City Compassion from Houston, Texas.
Bindu, we're talking to various folks around the country about their efforts to educate the public to support things like the Hinchey Bill being presented to Congress again this year, which would defund the DEA's efforts to bust medical marijuana patients. What are y'all able to do in the Houston area? It's kind of tough sledding around there, is it not?
Right. It's a little bit conservative over here, but I think people have their hearts in the right place. The Hinchey Amendment would basically prohibit the Department of Justice, and specifically the DEA, from using any of their funds to interfere with state medical marijuana laws. And so our main focus has been, well, it was originally supposed to be Tom DeLay, but we all know what happened with him. So we've been focusing on legislators here and working hard to get them to change their minds. My specific aim has been Representative John Culberson, who has consistently voted against the Hinchey Amendment, of course. And when asked, we went to one of his town hall meetings, and when asked about the Hinchey Amendment, he said, and I quote, we have videotape of him saying this, that there are states that have voted for medical marijuana, and I don't know why the federal government needs to interfere with it. That is the will of the voters of the states, so just leave it up to them. So obviously he understands the need for it, and but he's consistently voted against it, so we're trying to target him to kind of change his vote on this.
What's your website? How might folks get involved in support of this effort?
Our website is actually http://BayouCityCompassion.org, and that's BayouCityCompassion.org. Click on the Take Action page. There's actually a list of every single federal legislator in Texas, including Senate and House, and you can just click on their name of who represents you, and it'll lead you to a site that has their D.C. office contact information and their local office contact information. So you can call them and write letters. And we also have posted letters that you can just print out yourself and sign and send to Culberson. We'd really like to get him to change his vote, and we've already been seeing significant changes in his stance. So call your representative, make sure he knows how you feel, and make sure he knows that the American people clearly support medical marijuana in any national polling. So now it's time for them to represent us and the will of the people.
Well, it sounds like there's hope even deep in the heart of Texas.
I sure hope so, Dean.
Well, once again, we've been speaking with Bindu Nair. She's with the Bayou City Compassion Organization in Houston, Texas, fighting for the truth, fighting for medical marijuana. Any closing thoughts, Bindu?
I think it's going to take more people getting out there and calling on your representative. And once again, the website is BayouCityCompassion.org, and click on Take Action. But thank you so much, Dean.
I'm Bruce Merkin, and I'm Communications Director of the Marijuana Policy Project.
Bruce, this week we're doing a show trying to focus on the need for folks to support the Hinchey Bill coming before Congress again here later this month or in July. And I guess what I'm seeing is that there are a lot of people who think it's a good idea, including the Presbyterian Church. What's going on in that regard?
Well, what's happening is that just the other day, Wednesday, the Presbyterian Church USA, which is the largest Presbyterian denomination in this country, voted at its annual General Assembly to endorse a resolution stating support of medical marijuana and supporting federal legislation to allow it to be used legally. So this is a huge step and certainly a big step towards helping people understand that this is not a fringe issue. This is as mainstream as it gets.
Well, there are, I think, some six or eight other denominations that have come out in favor of it, including Reformed Judaism, if I recall right.
Correct. Along with the United Methodist Church and the Episcopal Church and the United Church of Christ. So there's quite a few. So it's this is a very good sign, and it does seem to be a growing movement.
Oftentimes the agents of government say that there are no medical organizations that are in support of this, but that's untrue, and they try to claim the moral high ground in this regard, and yet there are a lot of churches that are saying that the drug czar is off base. Your thoughts?
So I think what this shows is a broad consensus among all sorts of folks, religious folks, medical folks. There are 37 Presbyterians in the U.S. House of Representatives. Only five of them voted for the Hinchey Amendment last year. So we're hoping that this may help change a couple of those folks.
So if folks want to learn more about this situation, please point them where they need to go on the web.
Well, they can simply look for us at mpp.org, and please do and get involved. There's still time to call and write your congressman.
And now for another black perspective on the drug war. Racism is an ugly thing, and it is no less ugly when it is institutional than when it is personal. The advantage of institutional racism is it is no longer any one person's fault. In the states bordering Mexico, there is a perception that the country is being invaded by hordes of poor brown people from the South who are bent on stealing. Some are here to steal our jobs, and some are here to rob our homes and steal our money, and some to steal our social services. Things were not so different back in the mid-30s, and there was a sentiment among the American people that the country was being ruined by thieving Mexicans and worthless blacks. These undesirable people were the target of racist attacks, including fantastic tales of horrific crimes, abuse of white women, and drug-induced insanity. The recreational smoking of marijuana was a practice popular among Mexicans at the time, and its use was being picked up by Southern blacks. The first laws against marijuana were aimed at controlling this dark menace. Now, it is 75 years later, and the war on drugs is still targeting the black, the brown, and the poor of all colors. The justification for the war is still based on lies about horrific crimes and drug-induced insanity. How much longer are we going to continue scapegoating cannabis for our racist foolishness? How much longer are we going to claim personal innocence while allowing the drug war to do our racist dirty work? I say, if it is not the fault of one, it is the fault of all who do not actively oppose it. For the Drug Truth Network, this is Phil Jackson.
In recognition of outstanding achievements in the field of outstanding, the Drug Truth Network is proud to present the Tin Foil Hat Award.
Probably take all the suspense out of it if I tell you we're giving away 5 tin foil hats this week for daring to shred the Fourth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution and to hand over more power to the most heavily armed civilian outfits in America. Done, supposedly, so that drug users won't have time to flush their drugs down the toilet. So this week we award the tinfoil hat to Antonin You Don't Really Need That House, Do Ya, Scalia, Samuel Payne Is Good, Alito, Anthony I'm Not Really a Kennedy, Clarence Short and Curly, Thomas, and Chief Jokestus, John Torture Is Good for Business, Roberts. In closing, once again, I remind you, there is no truth, justice, logic, scientific fact, or medical data involved. The drug war is a sham. Prohibido istaki valesco.
For the Drug Truth Network, this is Dean Becker, asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. The show produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston. Our engineer, Philip Duffy.